This is Jen.
This is Kelsey.
And welcome to the first 50 pages. Sherman Alexie.
Suzanne Collins.
Ellen Hopkins.
Lois Lowry.
Harper Lee.
J.D. Salinger.
Mark Twain.
Maurice Sendak.
Dave Pilkey.
Stephen King.
Roald Dahl.
John Steinbeck.
Judy Blume.
Maya Angelou.
Toni Morrison. What do these authors have in common?
Well, these authors are some of the most challenged authors of the 21st century.
So what does it mean to be a challenged book or a challenged author?
Challenges are an attempt to remove material from the curriculum or library, which then restricts the access of others. The American Library Association takes the position that challenges are a threat to freedom of speech and choice.
So challenges are a form of censorship?
Yeah, definitely.
So Kelsey and I wondered how authors feel about their books being challenged, and we found some interesting stories.
J.K. Rowling is the wildly successful author of The Casual Vacancy, the Cormoran Strike series, and of course, the Harry Potter series, which you've all heard me praise time and time again in previous podcast episodes and on Check It Out. According to the American Library Association's Intellectual Freedom blog, in case you've been hiding under a rock or sworn off reading since 1997, J.K. Rowling's seven-book series features Harry Potter, a boy who finds out he's a wizard when he received his invitation to attend Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Harry learns that his parents were killed by Lord Voldemort, who's otherwise referred to as He Who Must Not Be Named, or You Know Who, the most evil wizard in history, but that he survives the attack with only a lightning-shaped scar, or so he believes. Throughout the series, Voldemort returns in increasingly horrible ways, and Harry and his friends must defeat him in order to save the wizarding world. Since its publication more than 20 years ago, the Harry Potter series has become one of the most challenged books on record, and has faced more than its share of attempts to see the books censored, banned, or even burned. Most challenges aimed at the series have been for religious reasons. The series is still facing challenges in 2019. Just this fall, a parochial school in Tennessee has decided to ban the series from its shelves after its pastor took exception to their portrayal of magic. And in talking about the series in 1999, author Judy Blume, whose own books have been challenged repeatedly, had this to say about the Potter controversy. "I knew this was coming. The only surprise is that it took so long. As long as it took for the zealots who claim they're protecting children from evil to discover that children actually like these books. If children are excited about a book, it must be suspect."
Another author challenged time and time again has been John Green, bestselling author of several books, including The Fault in Our Stars, Paper Towns, An Abundance of Catherines, and most recently, Turtles All the Way Down. In 2015, John Green's book, Looking for Alaska, was the most challenged book as reported to the ALA. Looking for Alaska is told from the perspective of Miles, a teenager who leaves his boring high school to attend a co-ed boarding school and embark on a new adventure, one that is alluded to from the famous last words of authors. At Culver Creek Boarding School, he joins an eccentric friend circle which includes Alaska, a rebellious, poetic prankster who will alter his life. Most complaints about Looking for Alaska were for explicit language and sexually explicit descriptions. John Green responded to the announcement that his book made the top of the list with a 3-minute video that he posted to YouTube. So in the video, which has over 1 million views, Green says,
"Text is meaningless without context, and what usually happens with Looking for Alaska is that a parent shows one particular page of the novel to an administrator, and then the book gets banned without anyone who objects to it having read more than that one particular page."
Looking for Alaska made the ALA Top 10 list again in 2016, and when a Kentucky high school considered removing the book from the library and senior English curriculum, the community fiercely advocated to keep it in the classrooms. The teacher who wanted to use Looking for Alaska in her classroom received more than 500 encouraging emails, half of them written by teens who had read the novel. But she was also publicly attacked by some community members, with at least one person demanding that she be fired. In support of the high school staff and students, John Green posted on Facebook that he was grateful to those who understood the importance of reading books critically and thoughtfully as a whole, rather than focusing on the individual scenes ripped from their context. So these are just a couple of the books that face challenges, you know, year after year. But last year, the ALA reported there were 531 total materials affected in censorship attempts in 2018. this did include magazines, films, and databases.
Which I think really just kind of reiterates that censorship isn't always just books. It also can be programs, databases, displays, artwork, even social media at a library can be challenged.
And censorship, defined by the American Library Association, is a change in the availability of access to materials based on content and made by a governing body or its representatives. And so such changes could include exclusion, restricted access, removal of the book, or just changing who it's available for. The American Library Association produces these really cool infographics every year that kind of show this kind of censorship by the numbers. And a couple things really stood out to us in some of the data that they present.
Yeah, we are really surprised by where, you know, challenges take place. As you would expect, 59%, you know, take place in public libraries, but then 23% happens in school libraries, 14% in just schools in general, 3% in academic libraries, which I guess I didn't necessarily equate, you know, censorship or banning of books happening in the academic library world, and then 1% special or, you know, prison libraries.
So who initiates the challenges? You know, who are these people challenging books? And by and large, it kind of is divided between library patrons and parents. And that's probably the difference between the school and public libraries. But 33% of library patrons initiate challenges, and 32% of the challenges are initiated by parents.
Yeah, so it seems, you know, pretty even across the board there. And then kind of when we think of book censorship, it's not just challenging a book or, you know, filling out form to, you know, have the library reconsider the materials. Censorship can be things as like vandalizing pages or, you know, taking a book off the shelf and hiding it somewhere else that maybe you require parental permission to access that content or, you know, removing the materials or even the extreme of burning books.
What are some of the reasons for book challenges? Right now, a lot of them are the LGBTQ content or political viewpoint. People feel they're pornographic, religious viewpoint, sexually explicit, anti-cop, you know, language, violence, racism, anything that people consider obscene or that they take offense to. So, you know, as librarians, we know that we have materials in our library that are going to be offensive to some people.
Yeah, and Joe Godwin kind of says it best by saying, a truly great library contains something in it to offend everyone.
There is something called, if you haven't heard of it, the Freedom to Read Statement. And it's included in a lot of libraries' collection development statements. It really is truly inspired reading. If you've never read the Freedom to Read Statement, it was originally adopted in 1953 by the American Library Association Council and the American Association of Publishers Freedom to Read Committee. The Freedom to Read Statement has a bunch of different propositions in it. And the first one, I really think, is one of the most important ones. And it says that it is in the public interest for publishers and librarians to make available the widest diversity of views and expressions, including those that are unorthodox, unpopular, or considered dangerous by the majority. And that's really one of our goals in collection development, is making available the widest diversity of views.
Yeah, we won't claim to have every single book that's ever been written on a particular subject, but we try to have a little bit of everything so that you can find something that inspires you to read and take up reading. On the other hand, Proposition 2 of the Freedom to Read Statement talks about how publishers and librarians serve the educational process by helping to make available knowledge and ideas required for the growth of the mind and the increase of learning. So, you know, we're really there to help you become a lifelong learner, you know, whether you start coming in at story time through, you know, you're reading well into your 80s and 90s, and maybe you're getting books delivered to you from the library. You know, librarians and libraries are there to make that happen.
And it's okay not to like every book you read. I often have people tell me that they didn't like a book. I've often come across books that I don't like to read. But for every book, there is a reader. And I think one of our librarian superpowers is that we're here to help you find a book that you can connect with or relate to or escape with. That's one of the things that librarians do. So yes, if you're looking for some inspired reading, definitely check out the Freedom to Read statement. And the last paragraph is my favorite part of the whole thing. We here stake out a lofty claim for the value of the written word. We do so because we believe that it is possessed of enormous variety and usefulness, worthy of cherishing and keeping free. We realize that the application of these propositions may mean the dissemination of ideas and manners of expression that are repugnant to many persons. We do not state these propositions in the comfortable belief that what people read is unimportant. We believe rather that what people read is deeply important, that ideas can be dangerous, but the suppression of ideas is fatal to a democratic society. Freedom itself is a dangerous way of life, but it is ours.
That sounds like one of those like great quotes at like the end of a movie, or saying it from like the top of a hill.
I get chills when I read that. So anyway, that's just my plug for the Freedom
that's
to Read.
That's us geeking out about the Freedom to Read statement. We can't help it.
Yeah.
Since 1982, the American Library Association and, you know, various partners have hosted an anti-censorship campaign to promote free speech and freedom of choice, and that is Banned Books Week. This year, it takes place from September 22nd through September 28th. And in this annual event, it celebrates the freedom to read and spotlights current and historical attempts to censor books in libraries and schools. We're joined today by Zach Frecking-Smith, director of the Cherokee Public Library. Zach has done presentations across the state of Iowa on Banned Books Week and has, you know, just really has a passion for Banned Books Week.
Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today, Zach.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to chatting with you guys.
So we do have some questions for you today, Zach. So why do you think it's important for a community to celebrate Banned Books Week?
Well, I think that a big majority of the community, when we're talking about Banned Books Week, if you just mention it kind of in public, like, oh, it's Banned Books Week, everybody be happy. They're like, why are we celebrating the fact that you're banning these books? Or you set up a display and they're like, why did you ban these books? This is ridiculous. It's like, well, I mean, they're literally out there for you to check out. So we didn't really ban them. You have to, you know, break it down and explain that it's actually a celebration for free speech and against censorship. And, you know, in this day and age, especially, you know, when we're talking about free speech and First Amendment rights and all that, it is really important for the community to know that the library is really kind of the last bastion of free speech for any side, really. You know, we're here to provide you access, and we want to make sure that you get the best information and the most accurate information as well. And I think that Banned Books Week is a great way to use that as a catalyst to explain, you know, how the library can actually affect change.
Kind of expanding on that, you know, what kind of, you know, programs or displays have you done at Cherokee to kind of celebrate Banned Books Week?
My first year I went all out because, you know, I'm trying to make an impression.
Did all the bells and whistles.
Right, exactly. And then it kind of gotten less and less throughout the years. But that first year, I did kind of a talk just about what is Banned Books Week? How do we celebrate that? Why is it important to celebrate it? And then I did some book talks as well, you know, about popular banned books. I kind of focused on, like, the ridiculous ones. Like, oh, wow, why is this children's book? Why is Captain Underpants banned or challenged or whatever? That was pretty nice. We had a good turnout for that. And as far as my bulletin board went for it, you know, our display, I made these, like, jail cells out of wood and foam, which was just a pain in the butt to make, but it was totally worth it. And so, you know, I put a bunch of books in jail cells, and I had a whole bulletin board with, like, a big caution tape X in the back and then, like, fire, and it was, you know, kind of the fire and brimstone scary banned book stuff, like, this is the path that you're leading if you want to get rid of books.
I do think that some of the most engaging and eye-catching displays in the library happen during Banned Books Week. And librarians really get inspired. I have seen some really cool displays, really testing the creativity of librarians and resources because, you know, we don't have unlimited resources.
Yes, I think people kind of don't realize that, you know, we're artisans or crafters in our spare time, like putting together these like grand thought out displays full of everything that, you know, we've made by hand.
But I think it really is a labor of love to see those displays.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of librarians kind of take Banned Books Week personally as well. You know, it's like, this is our craft. You're trying to censor our livelihood.
Well, even, and limit access for others.
Right. And so we kind of take it very personally. We want to let people know this is not okay. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean nobody else can like it. You know, it's just, it's very frustrating.
So, Zach, what is the difference between a challenge of a book and banning a book?
One of the big issues with Banned Books Week is that we use those terms interchangeably when they are vastly different things. When a book is challenged, that just means that somebody, 9 times out of 10, it's a parent, has found a book to be inappropriate and has talked with the library director, or the school librarian, or the principal about, you know, removing the book. Usually, if a book is challenged versus banned, it hasn't been taken off shelves. So challenged books remain on the shelves, but we still report it to the ALA. So it's for that data that, you know, this stuff still happens. Whereas a banned book is one that is taken off the shelves.
So, Zach, have you ever had any books challenged or, you know, people that have wanted to ban books at the Cherokee Public Library?
Oh, yeah. The one notable one, you know, of course people are like, oh, I don't understand why 50 Shades of Grey is in the library, blah blah blah, and it's like, well, just because you don't like it doesn't mean anybody else does.
Well, and the thing about that book too is there was so much public interest in reading it.
Absolutely, and that's what's important about it. Is that we provide the access for patrons who want these things. We don't provide it for people who don't want it.
And I do think it is always a surprise when patrons bring concerns to you, because it's often not for a book like 50 Shades of Grey. You know, it's often for something else.
Kind of in doing our research, you know, for this episode, we kind of found that a lot of what is banned has been, you know, kids or teen materials that you don't really see any, you know, adult books on there, whether they're fiction or nonfiction, that the majority of, you know, calls for things to be banned or, you know, calls for things to be censored kind of, or, you know, those juvenile or younger materials.
Yeah, yeah. And that's definitely something that we see. I mean, I've gotten to the point where I'm not surprised really anymore. it's like, oh, okay. Which one's going to be on the, you know, list this year? And the main reason that it's a lot of youth books as opposed to adult books is that the parents don't read the book and find out what it's about. Like the book Drama by Brandon Telgemeier has been on the list for the past 5 years, I feel like.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's for overt LGBT themes.
Zach, could you speak to the process of how libraries address challenged books? Because we do listen.
Yeah.
You know, if a patron has a concern, they should bring it to a librarian.
Yeah, like we want to hear those concerns.
But there is a process. Absolutely. So could you speak to the process of how libraries address challenge books?
I can kind of speak to how my library does it. You know, I think that this is generally what libraries do. So our end goal is, yes, librarians, we want to listen to our patrons' needs. We want to listen to what they want out of the library, absolutely. But at the same time, if that comes to a detriment to somebody else, maybe an underprivileged group, we definitely want to avoid that happening. So what we do is I listen to the patron first. I talk with them. You know, I listen to them before we went on to the further steps, which for us, it would be, okay, you need to fill out this form. It's a reconsideration form. We never say removal. It's reconsideration. And, you know, it will be, let's talk about, tell me why you think that this is a bad material, why you want it removed, all that kind of stuff. And then that gets turned into me, which then goes to the board, and they have to be at the board meeting as well to talk about the book.
Why do you think it's so important for libraries to have board-approved collection development policies?
Mainly as a CYA measure, you know, where you have that, you know, if a patron comes to you and asks, why was this book chosen? You have a document you can pull out and be like, okay, according to our selection policy, which was approved by the board, this is why we have this book in the library, or why it's allowable to have this here. You know, it gives you not only a firmer backing for when you're talking with a patron, but if it does move to some sort of lawsuit or litigation, you do have something, you know, that's dated, it's in their minutes for when you approved it, that you can put out and say, this is our policy, this is in accordance with our policy.
What questions do you get asked when doing presentations on banned books, or, you know, what quote-unquote misinformation do you think people have about banned or challenged books?
A lot of the questions people ask are like, well, what about this book? What about this book? What about this book? And it's like, okay, well, if you're asking me, chances are, yes, it has been challenged or banned at some point. But I can't speak to the reasons why without Googling it. But as far as things other than that, it's a lot of the misinformation is people think these are banned nationally, whereas a lot of these, and by a lot I mean all of these, are usually local. You know, either within a school district or a single library, a town, you know. The only nationwide book banning was for Ulysses, which is not anymore. There's a great episode about Ulysses in the podcast Annotated from Book Riot. It's amazing. And
we'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's really good. Actually, just listen to Annotated. It's a great podcast just in general for bookie people. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's really the big main question that I get, you know, is, well, if these are banned, why are they here? And it's like, well, they are and they aren't. You know, they're banned in a place, and just because they're banned there doesn't mean they are here. And that's normally the main thing that I get asked about.
And I think this brings us back to kind of our first questions, you know, why you think it's important for a community to celebrate Banned Books Week, but also just to have an awareness that these kind of challenges happen and what kind of books they happen to.
You know, it's not just something in the past either. Like it's still happening.
Right. And that's why the ALA just does an amazing job of getting their ducks in a row and releasing that Banned Books Week list. And I mean, all of the publicity for it. I mean, I highly encourage everybody to go check out ala.org/bbooks. There's a bunch of information there that you can share with your patrons. They've got a lot of printouts. This year they're doing quotes, either from reviews or from challenges. And the one for Captain Underpants is amazing. So, I mean, I'm not going to spoil it here, but you just need to go and read it because it is top notch.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today, Zach, and sharing your experiences Banned Books Week. And we hope you have an inspiring and fantastic Banned Books Week in Cherokee.
Yeah, thanks, Zach.
Oh, we will. Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
For more information on Banned Books Week or challenge books, visit the American Library Association's website.
To hear more from Zach Frecking-Smith, check out his podcast, Feels Like Weezer.
We'd love to hear your thoughts and experiences with Banned Books Week, or just drop us a line to tell us how awesome your public library is. Let us know at first50pages@kwit.org. This is Kelsey.
And this is Jen.
And thank you for listening to the First 50 Pages.